Today's Washington Post reports that the criteria required to put someone on the government's terrorist watch list has changed. Civil liberties groups are crying foul, but the government is now allowing someone's name on the list if there's a tip from just one credible source instead of several. But what does it take to put someone into the government's highly secret suspicious activity database? The Washington Post has also been examining citizen monitoring and reports that if you've taken a picture of, say, a ferry or a monument, and a neighbor or police officer thinks you look suspicious, that information may be in your state's fusion center, as it's called, and may then make its way to a national database the FBI is building called Guardian. How well does it work? Well, the Post found that in Virginia, the State Fusion Center labeled historically black colleges potential centers for terrorism. And Pennsylvania hired a self-proclaimed terrorism consultant who then turned around and investigated Tea Party gatherings and environmental activists. Former intelligence analyst and Washington Post columnist William Arkin co-wrote the Post's recent Top Secret America story. He joins us from the studios of Vermont Public Radio. Bill, welcome.
Thank you very much for having me, Robin.
Flesh this out for us because, as you write, Britain and Israel have long had this level of monitoring citizens. It's relatively new here. What is happening?
Well, let's remember now again what the government itself concluded was the cause of 9/11. Not American behavior, not hatred, but inability or failure on the part of the intelligence community to connect the dots. And so really, we've seen this massive expansion of dots, dot collectors, if you will, since 9/11. It began with the expansion of intelligence operations and fusion, which is a combination of FBI and state and local police departments as well as other homeland security authorities so that the dots can be better connected. In fact, across the country right now, there are 91 fusion centers at the state and local level, either developed or under development. Four or five have opened just this year in 2010. So we've sort of started at this point of no national police force in our country, no domestic intelligence capability, and now we've ended up with both of them, though not in name.
Well, let's give some examples. For instance, you write about police in Orange County, California, seeing somebody take a picture of a fireboat and a ferry with a cell phone camera. This person then talked on the phone, took some more pictures, and then got on the ferry with two small kids. You know, could be a sightseeing trip. But this information went into a file on this person?
Well, maybe not his name, but maybe the license plate of his car. And if that license plate number shows up at a military base 2 weeks from now somewhere else because he decides to take a picture at an air show, or that license plate number is involved in a speeding incident somewhere else, it all starts to build a profile and some kind of a confidential file of a person who has been accused of no wrongdoing other than the fact that he has been swept up into this massive database called Suspicious Activity Reporting, SARS.
But there are people who are going to say, that's a good thing if somebody's taking a picture of a ferry and then 2 weeks later is taking a picture of a military base. That's a good thing that someone's tracking that because 3 weeks from then he could be taking a picture of an airplane and 5 months from then he could be trying to bring down that airplane. That early dot is something you might want to have.
Well, I don't disagree with you that the theory is correct. However, when you collect so many dots with so much promiscuity, with so little control over what gets placed into the dot soup in the first place, I'm not sure that you're going to catch the person that needs to be caught.
In fact, a former CIA counterterrorism expert told you that this sort of bottom-up, you know, everybody be a volunteer to look for suspicious activity, is resource inefficient. Most terrorism-related leads originate from confidential sources, this person told you. The deputy head of LA's counterterrorism police also said there's so much useless information gathered this way. It's like a garage in your house you keep throwing junk into until you can't park your car in it. That's the opinion of those counterterrorism experts. But do we know if any of this monitoring of suspicious activity led to some of the recent arrests? For instance, the Baltimore construction worker who wanted to bomb the military recruiting station, or the Somali teenager who wanted to set off a bomb at that Christmas tree lighting in Portland, Oregon, and was foiled. Do we know if any of this bottom-up monitoring led to those captures?
Well, there are a couple of examples, Robin, in fact, where law enforcement officials at toll booths or over bridges have caught people. But by and large, the question is whether or not the overall effort is worth it. The courthouse square bomber in Portland, Oregon, over Christmas. I mean, this was just a standard gumshoe FBI undercover operation. So it's not so much that it is the collection of these suspicious activity reports. It's not so much that the efforts themselves are a waste of time. It's that we clearly have not mastered the art of counterterrorism. But what we have mastered is filling our garage. Clearly, everyone we've spoke to has said that this is not the best way to do things, that they themselves didn't really see the value of the fusion centers, which is why many states are taking their fusion centers and switching them over to emergency operations centers and crime tracking centers, because there isn't even enough terrorism for them to be able to monitor.
Well, explain what's happening in Memphis, Tennessee, where they used Homeland Security money to pay for a military-grade infrared camera that they've mounted on a cruiser to sort of sweep through parking lots and take pictures of license plates, and then they might find a car belonging to someone wanted on an arrest warrant. Now, that's about crime, not terrorism.
Yes, it is, Robin, and here is a perfect example of where we've seen this kind of counterterrorism and Homeland Security encroachment into all aspects of our lives. You can't just label everything terrorism. What we're doing is we're communicating to those who do wish us harm that we ourselves don't see a distinction between military and civilian, that we don't see a distinction between enemies, that we can't tell the difference between war and crime.
Well, Homeland Security Secretary Janet Napolitano spearheaded this kind of citizen reporting when she was governor of Arizona. She had the See Something, Say Something campaign. And again, as Homeland Security Secretary, she's recently asked Walmart, Amtrak, sports leagues, and hotel chains to help out in this national monitoring. And Memphis, the police department's technology specialist there, realized that officers were wasting time because they were going on to the wrong homes to serve warrants. So this high-tech specialist persuaded the local utility company in Memphis to give him a daily update of the names and addresses of customers to make sure he had the right people in the right homes. Isn't that a good thing? Even though it's asking your utility to participate, it does help the police go to the right home.
Well, again, I think that in a targeted way, all of this is good. You know, I don't want to overstate the case because I don't think that we have a police state in America, but we have a police state apparatus that's growing in America.
We're asking, where are we on monitoring for suspicious activity in America? Washington Post national security columnist William Arkin co-wrote the latest installment of that paper's Top Secret America series, Counterterrorism Surveillance by State and Local Police, your neighbor, maybe stadium or hotel workers or Amtrak employees, if they see something suspicious. And Bill, you write about self-proclaimed terrorism experts who sell themselves to local police departments. There's Walid Shubat in South Dakota, a Muslim who converted to Christianity, and told local police officers that most Muslims want to impose Sharia law in the U.S. He advised them to tap the phones of Muslim student groups and mosques. And you give other cases of what seem like completely inappropriate, untrained consultants.
Well, this is a business now, Robin. And so once you create counterterrorism at the state and local level, you have to train law enforcement officers and government officials in doing their job. And many cottage industries have grown up, some of whom do valuable training on how to, in fact, respond to emergencies or how to do intelligence analysis over computers. But others are involved in briefing local and state authorities on Islam. People who have no particular expertise to do so or have a political agenda, you know, maybe they're not as conversant and maybe they're not as experienced. And so this is what we see happening.
But look, aren't we also hearing that the U.S. has to be more vigilant about homegrown terrorists, that the attention has to be switched, especially because of the recent cases? And how else to do that but to ask people, if they see anything suspicious. I mean, to play devil's advocate here, isn't that how you find the neighbor who suddenly is acting in a way that they weren't before they end up with a car parked in Times Square?
Well, I think that the idea that Americans need to be more vigilant about potential threats is certainly true. And I think that if we look back at 9/11 and 19 men who lived in Florida, New Jersey, Arizona, San Diego, who went to gyms, who went to pizza parlors, who went about their normal lives and no one seemed to notice, it would certainly back up what you're saying. But in most cases, the reality is that that even homegrown terrorists are discovered because of traditional law enforcement activity, whether that be wiretaps, confidential human sources, or hard investigative work done by the FBI and state police. And so this idea that somehow we're going to have the Walmart checkout person or the Amtrak conductor catch a terrorist, it's very seductive. But there's no real evidence that it is, in fact, the best use of our resources. But what it does is it does say to everyone in America, there's a certain type of person, a certain look, a certain way of being that is suspicious. And if I'm a Muslim or if I'm a Sikh or if I'm a person of color, I will know pretty clearly that that I'm going to be looked at first, and that is inimical to all of our basic civil liberties ideas.
One last question. One of the concerns about security of this national security information, it's you describe a top secret vault almost in Washington where the FBI is gathering all of the information from the state fusion centers. But what's the sense that the public will have access to that?
Well, the system that's being created to collect suspicious activity reports exists at two levels. At the most classified level, which is access to all information and all affidavits, this is called Guardian. And then at the local level, it's called eGuardian. It's a kind of a boiled-down version, sometimes without the names or without the details. And a lot of emphasis and energy goes into creating a less classified system that can be accessed by county sheriffs, by local police department, by state agencies, et cetera. A lot of emphasis and a lot of effort is going into making sure that fusion centers across the states comply with federal civil rights and privacy rules. In fact, a fusion center can't get federal dollars unless it has a privacy plan. But I think that what we see happening is the creation of a larger apparatus, the collection of a larger amount of information, where nobody really is going to want to throw it away. I mean, what officials kept saying to us over and over again is, well, you know, now there's a 90-day rule. If a report doesn't produce something in 90 days, it has to be purged from the database. And then the FBI has a 5-year rule that applies to Guardian if something has risen to a level of where it actually passes inspection by a human being. And then some say, well, okay, but wait a minute. What if on the first day of the 6th year, a Mohammed Atta does something suspicious? And so in the process itself of creating rules of how information moves and how much can be collected and where it's stored, there are disagreements as to what the most effective way is of doing it. And a lot of that disagreement, Robin, it derives from just plain fear that we cannot be doing the job of tracking everybody in the best way that we can. And I believe that that fear not only is well-founded, but I think that the solution is not what the federal authorities and state authorities think it is. The solution is to focus attention more on who the real threats are, whether it be the underwear bomber, the Times Square bomber, the Portland, Oregon bomber. These people are people who are affiliated with and associated with criminal activity, and that is where the focus of our counterterrorism and homeland security effort should be.
That's William Arkin, national security expert and columnist for The Washington Post, together with Post reporter Dana Priest. He's written the recent Top Secret America story, and they are currently working on a book. Bill, thanks so much.
Thank you for having me on, Robin.